The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
We turn to the Middle East, and the government will this morning discuss the escalating conflict there and their plans for the 22,000 Irish citizens currently sheltering in place in the region. And we begin with Graeme McQueen, who's the DAA Media Relations Manager. We just want to find out, Graeme, what's happening at the airport. We know there have been many cancellations over the last number of days. What's the state of play this morning?
Yeah, another day of disruption. All flights cancelled to the airports in the Middle East today. So that's 16 flights cancelled and some cancelled already for tomorrow. So no end in sight to this. You're probably talking around 15,000 passengers discommoded since Saturday. We've got five aircraft sitting on the airfield at Dublin Airport since Saturday. Normally they'd be going back and forth continuously. So yeah, I think we're all just waiting to see what happens next.
Mm-hmm. So is it the case that there are passengers waiting in the airports in the Gulf, because we know that's a major transition hub?
Yeah, you'll have passengers in the airport. The airlines are pretty good at putting people up, though, so there'll be a lot of people in hotels. A lot of people are at home trying to rebook. You know, I understand the airlines' customer service teams are very busy at the moment, so if you can't get through straight away, please just be patient. Work with the teams. They will get to you in time. But a lot of people, we're getting contacted from people trying to get back from Australia. They would come through on those Middle Eastern flights. People here trying to go the other way as well. So when you've got no end in sight, it's hard for them to rebook. They don't have certainty, it just leads to a lot of frustration.
And you have very limited information as well about what's going to happen, even in the coming hours. Is that the case?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, airlines make decisions late because they want to see if it's possible to get those flights away. So we have got those cancellations in for tomorrow morning, but the schedule still shows that the flights will run tomorrow afternoon. That looks unlikely at the moment. It certainly won't happen unless the airspace opens up. So, but we're in constant contact with the airlines. We're working very hard to accommodate any passengers who arrive at Dublin Airport, welfare packs and things like that. So we're doing all we can, but it's a very difficult situation.
Okay, because yesterday we heard as we went through the programme that there would be a limited number of flights leaving from Abu Dhabi back to Ireland. Did that happen, and is that going to happen again today?
Yes, some of those flights did take off yesterday. I understand some of those were repatriation flights and they were taking very certain flight paths would work. Coming to Dublin was not an option.
Okay.
We're hopeful that that won't be too far away. What you probably will see when flights do restart, though, is that they'll go one way on the first day because all the planes are out of place. As I say, we've five on the airfield at Dublin Airport that shouldn't really be there. So until they get up and running, there's going to be disruption.
Right, but intending passengers, you always give them this message. The airline is where you go first for information.
Exactly. Your airline is the only one who can tell you whether your flight is going to run. So contact them. Get on their online channels. Keep an eye on your email. Keep an eye on your text messages as well. They're trying to contact you to let you know what's happening with your flight. If you don't get through first time, just keep trying because they are very busy.
Are there other routes affected by this other than the ones going directly to the Gulf?
Yeah, any route that flies in that vicinity, so anything that flies near that airspace could be impacted. We're seeing lots of people this week who really need to get to those destinations in Australia, trying to get home or whatever. They're going different ways. Some of them are flying to America or different places to come at it from a different angle. So not great, not ideal. Some people just have to get where they need to get to, though, so they're doing everything they can.
Okay, so contact your airline, but don't expect any certainty in the coming hours, certainly. Graeme, thank you very much. That's Graeme McQueen there from the Dublin Airport Authority. Ciarán Flynn is on the line. Ciarán is a history teacher and Meath GAA secretary. Ciarán, you're speaking to us from Dubai.
Yes, Claire, thanks for having me on.
How are you?
Personally, not too bad. We're just kind of sitting still. There's not a lot going on. We're kind of the excitement or the kind of the madness of it all was at the weekend. It's calmed down a lot here, and it's just a lot of kind of sitting around, kind of waiting to move. That's the feeling at the minute.
What were you doing there? What was the plan?
Yeah, so myself and two of my colleagues there, Shane Scanlon and James McGraw, we were brought over to referee hurling league finals for the Middle Eastern GA board on Saturday. So we came over to referee those finals, and we basically, that's when it all started, really, at the end of the day.
You were caught right in the teeth of it, right?
Absolutely. There was the missiles were probably in the distance, but they were still within probably an hour or two of us, and you could see them overhead being intercepted. And it was very kind of chilling for the people watching the games after they ran towards the pavilion and stuff. It was a strange moment. Never forget it.
So your plan then, you were supposed to leave on Sunday, was it?
No, Monday, approximately 3 p.m. local time.
So, and you've been, hunkering down since then, waiting for news?
Yeah, in fairness, we're flying with Emirates, and I know some people said they've been frustrated with the customer support. I'd say the opposite. The customer support has been excellent. I contacted them using the X platform, and they were exceptionally expedient getting back to us. They gave us a provisional flight for Wednesday morning, so we're waiting hopefully to go on that. Provided there's no cancellations this evening, we're hoping to fly tomorrow. But that obviously the news from Dublin Airport that there was no inbound flights is a bit unsettling, that we might get delayed another 24 or 48 hours.
And how would you cope with that?
Well, thankfully, again, the UAE have been brilliant over here. Their tourism board have said that hotels have to keep us. There's all tourists are to be looked after, and the government will be footing the bill for that. So it's a massive step up by government agencies to basically, tourism is one of their biggest obviously trades, and they don't want to set any bad feelings with any tourists. So they're looking after everyone. So
there was a meeting between government officials and ministers last night where the suggestion was that Irish people might be bussed to Oman and get a flight out from there. How would you feel about doing something like that, or would you feel better just waiting where you are and flying out from Dubai?
It's interesting, the British were on about that as well. With Oman's approximately about, Muscat's about 5 hours away from here. So again, it's in potential war zones or targeted zones. There's been missiles intercepted above that area. Oman has been hit less than the UAE, but then UAE has probably better missile defence system. So it's an interesting one. But if the government are obviously going to provide like security or protection and they're going to stand over it, then we'll follow the advice. Like, that's what we've been pretty much doing so far, is following the advice of the consulate. Not to, like, there was talk of going to Riyadh in Saudi Arabia, which is a 10-hour drive, and flying from there. But then there was missiles again over the airport, so that was ruled out. So we'll just do whatever really is suggested, whatever is the safest and the best.
And as a history teacher, I assume you're needed in the job, right?
Of course, and in fairness to my school, I'm teaching in St. Kieran's Community School in Kells. The management there, my colleagues, are excellent. They said, don't worry, like, he says, this is not of my own doing. So the management have stepped up, and my colleagues, they're covering the classes, etc. But it's a unique enough situation now.
It certainly is.
Hopefully I'll be back. Looking forward to going back to work, which is an odd thing for most people to say.
Yeah, you sound pretty relaxed, Kieran, in fairness to you. I mean, are you nervous? Are you scared at all?
Just when that alert came on the Saturday night, that was the only moment I'd say that I felt my own defences were a bit rattled, that we got that chilling message basically that there was missiles incoming, basically take shelter. And the whole hotel, everyone in the country got that message. That was the only time I felt vulnerable, because you could hear and see things in the distance, and you could see it above head. But since then, you just have to trust that the agencies here, they're doing their job. There's no point fretting about it. It's kind of, you have to just go with the flow. Unless you're going to actually go out there and do something about it, you just have to hold firm and
That's probably not the best idea, to go out and try and do something about it. You have to just wait for the systems to be in place. Well, Kieran, we wish you well, and I hope that you manage to get on that flight on Wednesday, and we'll keep in touch with you. Kieran Flynn there, who's Meath GAA Secretary in Dubai. I'm also joined on the line by Fianna Fáil MEP for Dublin, Barry Andrews, and Labour TD George Lawler is with us as well. Barry, I'll come to you first. There's about 22,000 Irish citizens who are in the region of the Gulf. There have been calls for some for there to be a plan now put in place to get them out, to get them home, those who want to. I was talking to Kieran there about the plan to drive them to Oman and get them out that way. Do you think that the Irish government could do more to facilitate these people?
Well, good morning, Claire. Look, there is an EU civil protection mechanism, so that when the evacuations from Afghanistan happened back in 2021, that mechanism organized 98 flights. They did 400 flights as a result of COVID back in 2020. So there is a mechanism there, and this isn't a reflection of the Irish government at all, but so far that hasn't been triggered by any individual member state. It hasn't been requested. And that normally is requested when commercial options are not available. As you've just heard, I think it's a very dynamic situation, and it's not clear that those commercial options will come back on track. But if they don't, it's absolutely crucial that the EU civil protection mechanism is triggered, and the Irish government is part of that. We also have now, for the first time, we have our own aircraft, which can be used for evacuations for emergency situations. We have a C-295 aircraft, which is quite large, and a much smaller Dassault jet, which has seating for 14 people. So we're not at that stage yet, but other EU member states, for example, Germany is now preparing to evacuate its citizens from the Middle East, having originally said that that would be a last resort. They're going to, down that road and preparing for evacuation of their own citizens. I know the United Kingdom are doing the same. Italy have deployed a Gulf task force to the region. So I think we do need to get ourselves organized, whether it's through the deployment of our own assets or plugging into the EU civil protection mechanism in due course.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that it's enough to say or to suggest that people be driven to Oman and taken out that way? Or should we be doing more?
Again, I think people on the ground will have a much better insight into what the correct way to evacuate is. I know that some people actually did drive to Oman over the weekend to connect with flights out to Europe, and that's been explored at this stage. But I couldn't give anybody any advice whatsoever. Yeah. Simply to follow the advice, our own ambassador there in Abu Dhabi, Alison Milton, has just done a video which is very helpful and informative. And I'd encourage anybody to really keep in touch with the Department of Foreign Affairs and, of course, the airlines.
But you do seem to be saying that we're getting to the point now where we need a plan for these 22,000 Irish people.
Well, as I said, it's very dynamic, but I do think that we have to bear in mind that other EU member states are beginning to make these plans, and the United Kingdom is beginning to make these plans. We all hope that the commercial options will come back on track as quickly as possible. But if they don't, and if the political situation really deteriorates, if the conflict escalates, then these are options that will genuinely have to be considered. But, you know, as others have pointed out, at the moment, it's not safe for any aircraft to be in the region. So, and that includes military aircraft and other potential aircraft that would be used under that mechanism.
Listen, on the wider implications of all of this, I read a piece which suggested that the EU and the UK, to a certain extent, have become bystanders in the world as America and Israel make these very big decisions with huge implications for us all. What do you think of the EU response?
Well, I think that's the point. It has huge implications for us all, and more particularly for Europe. We've seen over the last two decades in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in Libya, and to a certain extent in Syria, that it's Europe that gets impacted by what's happening and not the United States, whether it's irregular population movement or other consequences. So Europe's interests are at stake here. They're very much at stake. And the idea that we would, you know, walk a circle around the basic principles of international law, and as Chancellor Merz said, that international rules have relatively little effect, is really putting a hostage to fortune. You know, when it comes to Russia, we have been quite rightly very determined about saying that international law should be followed and that breaches of international law should be the subject of prosecutions. But on this occasion, Europe has been very meek. It has been very disappointing to see this approach. And I think ultimately we will be the losers. Others will be emboldened to breach international law, and it will be Europe that will pay the price in due course.
Why do you think Europe has been meek?
Well, I think it's possibly caught up in the other issues, the tariff issues and Ukraine.
We're afraid of Donald Trump.
Identifies, yeah, I think there's a bit of that. I think there's a fear factor. And ultimately, European citizens want us to stand up to Donald Trump, frankly. That's my feeling. When we stood up to him on the issue of Greenland, when we absolutely insisted that the sovereignty of Greenland was not something for negotiation, it was not something for intimidation, it was an absolute red line for Europe. That message cut through to Washington. And I think that what we need to see is much clearer messages from Europe. And also, one of the things that's very disappointing is to see that Ursula von der Leyen and the EU High Representative, our Foreign Minister, Kaya Kallas, are pulling slightly in different directions. And that doesn't really help the coherence of the European message.
Well, could the Irish government do more to push this agenda that you see is lacking?
Well, you know, the Irish government is, you know, has its seat at the Foreign Affairs Council. There was a meeting yesterday or on Sunday at the Foreign Affairs Council. And we have a very clear view on this. We're one of the strongest defenders of international law, whether it's in the context of Ukraine or in Gaza or now in Iran. You know, we've been presented with the view that negotiations are futile in circumstances where the United States were negotiating just 4 days ago with Iran to succeed with a decommissioning of their nuclear capability. Uh-huh. In circumstances where the United States told us that their nuclear capability had been obliterated just last June. So we need to be pretty clear about this as friends of the United States, that the road they're going down is very similar to the roads we've gone down before. We've a very, very poor record in the Middle East. When I say we, the Western intervention of any sort has been absolutely calamitous and disastrous. And Europe has always been the first to have to pick up the pieces.
Okay, well, Barry, Andrew, stay with us if you can, because George Lawler's listening to all of that Labour Party TD. And George, we're talking to you about an impact that this is having on people right now when it comes to their home heating bills. But on the wider point that Barry has emphasised there, I mean, this action taken by America and Israel, we are the ones in Europe who ultimately pay the price, and yet we have no say, or we certainly had no say, in whether this action should happen or not.
Yes, good morning, Claire. We certainly appear to be, as Barry Andrews has alluded to there, bystanders in this. I would describe it as a war of choice by Donald Trump. As was said, up to a couple of days ago, the US were negotiating about the nuclear capabilities of Iran. And only last month, we were told that the nuclear capabilities had been obliterated. Mm-hmm. But yet again, we see Donald Trump acting in fond alliance with Benjamin Netanyahu in their war of choice to attack Iran. And yes, you are right. Europe always seems to be the one to suffer the most, whether it's in the area of trade or tariffs. And it's being influenced by trade and tariffs and our reaction and response as Europeans through Ukraine. And also, of course, the Israeli attacks on Gaza. And I mean, Ursula von der Leyen and Germany in particular have been very weak in this area. And really, I suppose their history is dictating that. But really, Ursula von der Leyen and Germany need to get over themselves in terms of what the response of Europe should be. Economically, we can certainly perhaps look at our own response as Europeans. We saw when the very mention of the trade bazooka was used during the tariff war, that the impact that was going to have on the markets was enough to pull Donald Trump back from his craziness. So certainly, I think Europe is punching below its weight and really needs to step up to the plate in the context of the influence a continent with 470 million people has in this area.
Uh-huh. I mean, a listener says, how can Europe step up when Trump and his cohorts haven't even got congressional approval, which they are supposed to do? Although there is a clock ticking on that, and depending on how long this lasts, he may have to go back and get that. But you're saying bring out the trade bazooka to deal with this issue.
I think that's the only thing that the likes of Trump understands. It was the only thing we saw effective when the tariffs were threatened to take over the political dialogue within Europe. Once that was initiated, he pulled back from the brink because, you know, Trump always chickens out, tackle. And we really need to be pulling our weight in this area, because when it comes to money, that's the only thing that Donald Trump and his acolytes seem to understand.
Barry, does that go too far for you?
Yeah, I don't think it's. I mean, the tariff issue is a separate issue, and I think the anti-coercion instrument that George is talking about is something that isn't triggered overnight. It's something that that takes some time to.
This is the
be
problem
deployed.
With the EU, isn't it? Like everything
no,
takes
it's,
time.
Look, the law is there for it. It was initially. It conceived in response to intimidation by China of one of the EU member states.
Okay,
so it was never meant to be something that could be triggered overnight.
But you're the one who says that international law is disregarded. It feels as though we have nothing to come back at him with because of this.
Well, the statements that we've released, unfortunately, have not been strong enough. They haven't. I mean, I really genuinely believe that as friends of the United States, we owe it to speak the truth, to say that there is no legal basis for this these attacks, that there's no domestic legal basis for this, as you mentioned, in Congress. There's no international legal basis for this in terms of an imminent threat coming from Iran. There's no evidence whatsoever that there was a nuclear threat coming from Iran, given that President Trump indicated it was already obliterated. So I think we just need to be much clearer in our statements about this. And ultimately, this hasn't been the case over the last 72 hours.
All right. Well, look,
I appreciate exactly what Barry is saying. However, I come back to the fact that the only thing that has any impact on Trump is the influence of the wealthy in America. And their national debt, I think, is something like 28 or 38 trillion dollars. The slightest hint of any threat to the markets there will send shockwaves through that. And that is the only thing that Donald Trump will take notice of. He won't take notice of any statements, of any threats of international suspension or anything like that. He doesn't want to know. And Ursula von der Leyen needs to step up to the plate with the rest of the European leaders to say enough is enough. We have 25,000 Irish citizens in Dubai at the minute who can't get their way home. My own daughter was lucky enough to get out of Dubai on Saturday to travel to her sister in Sydney, who incidentally works in the same hospital where the perpetrators and the victims of the Bondi Beach attack. This man has created chaos across the world, and he must be stopped. And we have to utilise whatever mechanism is there for us to do that.
Okay, I want to come back to home heating oil because, you know, we're talking about this impacting us. George, you're the one, along with other representatives around the country, who are getting phone calls from constituents now who feel that they're being price gouged on oil on foot of what has happened. Some of them have been in touch with us. €500 delivery of heating oil last week was €480. Today, the same amount is €620. There's no way the supplier didn't have more than a week's stock of oil. This is pure scalping. So, George, what's been happening?
Well, I'm fielding the same phone calls as your listeners are phoning into you, Claire. I spoke to an 89-year-old pensioner yesterday who ordered 300 litres of oil and was quoted €75 more than it would have been on Friday. I heard of another instance of something that was €505 on Friday and was €605 on Monday. You know, they say never waste a good crisis, and by God, the oil companies in Ireland seem to be adopting that mantra. I mean, I have called on the government. We do have a long history of maximum price orders in Ireland, and I have called on the government last night to, under the Consumer Protection Act, if the government believe that there's abnormal circumstances there, they can make an order declaring essentially a state of emergency in the supply of that product. And this could be made for an initial up to 6 months, and that could be extended, of course, for further periods.
Are we at that stage, do you think?
Well, I mean, this Trump has said this war is going to go on for 4 to 6 weeks. I mean, Russia said they would be in Kiev within 3 days. And 4 years later, that war is still going on and still having an impact in many, many ways. Here in Ireland, these oil companies would already know how much kerosene or home heating oil is needed for the next few months, and they would have had the oil that they're charging more for. They would have purchased that months ago, and they would have had it in stock months or weeks ago. So the notion that this gouging would be allowed, blatant gouging, I think is unconscionable, and the government has the power under the Consumer Protection Act of 2007 to intervene, and I believe they must do that because this is indicative of the greed that's out there at a time when, as we all know, households are under extreme pressure and they don't need this on top, blatant gouging on top of everything else.
A listener bought 250 litres early yesterday to top up the tank. As I was finishing paying for it online, the €310 I was being charged changed to €325. Greed doesn't cover it. The 250 litres now cost €340. Barry, do you think a government intervention is needed here?
Well, I mean, if there's evidence there, I think an investigation is the appropriate thing. If that is happening, because these prices shouldn't be coming through to consumer bills at this stage. I mean, this should be, you would expect the current increase in wholesale prices being affected some maybe in April, but not immediately. So I think it was definitely justify an investigation of the circumstances.
We'll leave it there. Barry Andrews and George Lawler, thank you both for being with us.
The Claire Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.